We're starting a show now called The Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change, and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests, or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com. Tonight we start with a story by the extraordinary Mike Bone called Promotion, Part 1. Then I interview Sasha Devitkina with Inflow Dance. Some words about creativity by Steve Payne, sent in from the UK. And then music by Mitch Miller. Stay tuned.
It was the winter of 1971. I had just graduated from the University of Georgia with a degree in marketing. I had secured a job working for Atlanta concert promoter Alex Cooley at his company, International Ventures, Inc., IVI. The only thing international about IVI is that we occasionally booked a band from Europe to perform in Atlanta, or we ate at the International House of Pancakes. The IVI offices were on Peachtree Street, isn't everything in Atlanta on some version of Peachtree Street, between 13th and 14th in the fabulous Miller Building. The Miller brothers were famous in Atlanta for not finishing their buildings. One day, there was a knock at the office door, and two young men entered. One was a tall, thin, red-headed man with curly hair. The other man was shorter with straight black hair. The redhead was a very affable guy named Gene Rumpel, the Atlanta promotion representative for Capitol Records. The guy with the black hair was Terry Knight, the manager of Grand Funk Railroad. Grand Funk Railroad had performed at the first and second Atlanta pop festivals. Terry wanted to give Alex Cooley a platinum disc for giving Grand Funk Railroad their launch at both these big festivals. When they left the office, I asked Alex, who was the redheaded guy? Alex told me his name was Gene Rumpel. He worked for Capitol Records as their promotion man. Gene Rumpel was the first promotion person I ever met. Until I met Gene Rumpel, I thought artists sent their records to radio stations and the stations just played them. I had no idea there was a human being behind each record pushing them, promoting them on the airwaves of radio stations. Living in Atlanta, I knew that WQXI did not play that many records, maybe 30 or 40, and they played them over and over again. My stations that I listened to were WPLO-FM, part of the Plow Broadcasting chain, WRAS, the Georgia State University College Station, and WREK, the Georgia Tech College Station. These were the stations that played a lot of records, and it was difficult to hear the same record twice in a week on these stations, much less two or three times a day. All of the promotion people hung out together and traveled together and went to shows together. It was a coterie of motivated young men that dressed well, drove nice cars, and they all had expense accounts. It was their job to secure airplay on radio stations for their company's artists. Some of them went into record stores and dealt with music journalists and concert promoters. They all seemed to really enjoy what they were doing. After working for the concert promoter for International Ventures, I worked at with bands at the local booking agency, Discovery, Inc., and I worked at a nightclub called Richards. I decided that I would like to take a shot at the record business, particularly the record promotion business. It looked like fun to me. I started looking around for an opening at one of the labels. As luck would have it, there was an opening at Warner Brothers Records in Memphis. Danny Davenport, the local Atlanta Warner Brothers rep, got me an interview, and I did not get the job. I kept looking and looking and soon found a job with a local label, the General Recording Corporation, owned by Mike Thevis. Mike was a local celebrity because he was in the pornography business. He was known as the Porno King. I was hired by Bob Harrington to promote an album by Red, White, and Bluegrass. I had no idea what I was doing, so I got a Bluegrass magazine that listed all the radio stations that programmed Bluegrass music and started mailing out copies of the album. After about a week, I started calling the stations and asking to speak to the DJs. It was at this point that I discovered that most radio stations had a music director or a program director that actually chose what records were going to be played. Norman Blake was a member of Red, White, and Bluegrass, so the band had some credibility. Once I determined it was the music director that I wanted to speak to, I actually got Red, White, and Bluegrass played on a few stations. After about 6 months at GRC, two men showed up at the office, Oscar Fields and Jim J.J. Jeffries. Both had been enticed by big money to come to GRC from Bell Records in New York. Oscar was going to handle sales and marketing, and J.J. was going to take care of promotion. J.J. had been a disc jockey on WQXI in Atlanta and Keener WKNR in Detroit. He knew his stuff about Top 40 radio. He could walk the walk and talk the talk. JJ sat me down in his office and gave me a list of 40 small market Top 40 stations. All of these stations were reporters. They reported to the tip sheets, Gavin, run by Bill Gavin in San Francisco, or the Friday Morning Quarterback, run by Cal Rudman in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. I made large index cards for each station, listing the call letters, frequency, wattage, address, program and music director, and the best time to call. JJ was the man that taught me the record business. Bob Harrington hired me. Mike Thevis was paying me, but JJ sat me down every Monday morning at 9 a.m. and went over who I was going to call and what I was going to say. I have to say that when I first met him, I was a little put off by his Top 40 attitude. I was such a hippie. I grew to appreciate that what Jim was teaching me was how all records should be promoted. I was in dreamland. JJ was in the record business. Stations were interested in other stations that had added the records and where it was working. They were interested in success stories with records, what was happening at the tip sheets, requests, and sales. After a few weeks, I actually started getting records added to a few stations. I was so proud to be getting a record added to a station in Madison, Wisconsin. The biggest Top 40 record we had at GRC was Chevy Van by Sammy Johns. This record peaked at number 5 on the Billboard chart in February 1975. It was heady days at GRC Records. We actually gave away a Chevy Van on WQXI AM in Atlanta. Granted, the Chevy Van we gave away was a clapped-out old telephone company truck that we had painted blue with GRC logo on the doors, but it was a Chevy Van. I have a picture of me, Cowdy McLeod, Jim Jeffries, and John Leader sitting on top of the truck. I had the pleasure of taking the artist, Sammy Johns, to Albany, Georgia to work the follow-up single to Chevy Van entitled Ragdoll. We took the entire staff at WALG-AM to dinner and went to a local club. Sammy took the stage and performed Chevy Van and Ragdoll. The MD committed on the spot to add Ragdoll, and Sammy and I headed back to Atlanta, a drive of about 4 hours. I was driving up I-75, and Sammy announced that he felt like fighting. It was 1 a.m. in the morning, and I was driving up I-75, and this guy wants to pull over so we can fight, right on the interstate. I just kept driving. Never again, I thought. Ha!
It's May 25th, 2021. Mystic Pete here with Sasha Devitkina.
Hi, Pete. My pleasure.
You have InFlow Dance. It's a process you've developed. Tell me about it.
Yeah, InFlow Dance is a guided dance meditation experience that combines elements of shamanic dancing, music journey, and breathing techniques.
You're putting it all together.
Yeah.
How did you find this?
And you know, actually, the name InFlow has a very special meaning. Every letter in the word flow stands for something. So it's finding limitless opportunities within.
Finding limitless opportunities within. InFlow Dance.
Yeah.
Boom.
I think that we are so overwhelmed with the amount of information available to us these days. And we keep running to all these external sources trying to find these answers. Meanwhile, all we have to really do is to slow down, connect to ourselves, and connect to that true self within who already knows everything. And there are so many ways to do that. And the way I do that is through the body movement.
Inner knowledge. Now, you're a professionally trained dancer, and somehow you've used your art, your craft, along with your personal life experiences and your own inner journeys, have come up with this system.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been asking myself this question actually a lot in the past few years, because I noticed that it was just so much easier for me as a human being to deal with some experiences in my life. My life is not ideal. I also went through traumatic experiences, my down moments. But I was always asking myself, how did I find the strength to overcome this? And why are my friends struggling so much? What did I do different? And I realized that I always danced it out.
Mm.
If something bad would happen to me, if I would get upset, or if I would have, you know, a bad experience, I would just go and dance. And I would not let that negative energy get stuck inside of my body. Because when it gets stuck, then it turns into something that we don't see, but it is constantly affecting the way we live daily.
So we're all subjected to challenges and difficulties. I guess the question is, do we let it just sit there and fester and turn into these knots of ongoing pain and then start crippling our body? Or do we somehow take what life has dealt us and sort it out and dance it out? Well, let's just get into that a little bit more. How do you see the arts in general or dance specifically as relating to suffering?
Oh, absolutely. Dance is a detox. It's a natural detox that is given to us by the birthright. We all can dance, we all can move our bodies, and we can release that negative energy. We can even sweat it out sometimes when we have to. And our body has this natural regeneration process. So through dance, we're just letting go of whatever doesn't serve us anymore. And we're opening the space to receiving something new and beautiful. So I would say it's totally a detox process.
I think people consider dance as something for professionals, for specialists. It's something that those talented people do. But there's other cultures where everybody dances. You go to the bar or to the center of town every night and everybody gets together and dances and touches each other. And there's this embrace and this community that's developed. But it's not quite that way here in the United States.
Yeah, it's a different culture. I think nowadays, going out to dance in the club or at the bar is more about socializing, getting to know new people, maybe finding what you're looking for in terms of connections, or maybe even feeling more confident in your life, you know? But dancing meditation process is different because you... Actually, a funny thing that I do, I blindfold people so they don't see each other, so they don't get distracted by how they look to each other, by how their movements look to each other. So shutting off their vision basically moves the conversation within, and you have a better chance to actually talking to yourself and understanding what you're looking for. What do you actually desire without being disturbed by those thoughts? Oh, am I looking good in this outfit? Are my moves good? Am I looking professional? Am I moving the right way? Because this is a different story. This is the movement for socializing. And what I offer people is movement to actually connect with their true self and find themselves.
Let me go into this a little bit more ancient trends in dance. In tribal times, there's, of course, mating dances and fertility dances and war dances. I mean, there's dances for a lot of different life journeys and initiations. But I think about my own life. I had a pretty rough childhood, but in eighth grade, I was in a school where for gym class, there was a dance class. And it just seemed so kind of corny. And what they taught was square dancing. And I came in like, oh my God, what a, are you kidding? This is a joke. But they turn on the music and the teacher would have none of our jabbering and skepticism. And in a few minutes, the boys and girls were all dancing together doing square dancing. Now, square dancing is a very easy dance to immediately learn and touch people. It might have been the first time I was actually touching women and men and, you know, like interacting physically. And by the end of the class, I remember I was kind of high. It was like a moving experience. Looking back, I can see how important that was for me. How dance can open up this social space and this intimate space and the sensual space without really getting sexual. Oh, there's this sexual dance too, but it doesn't have to be that way. But how kind of lonely we all are these days, and we're bereft of touch. So I have a DJ show. I feature DJs every Saturday night. So I'm very close to the dance scene, the rave scene. And one criticism I have is everybody's dancing alone. I mean, I dance in my living room alone all the time, and I love it. There's nobody is connecting with each other. There may be 1,000 people, and there's nobody dancing together. And it's sometimes it's like, what is going on here? There's something really off about this. Isn't like the primary force of dance to connect with people, to hold hands? Where's the circle? Circle dance. Go back into tribal times. There were always circle dances. And square dancing, there's a lot of circle kind of dance. But no more. It's all isolated unless you go into more like salsa or tango or partner dance. Anyway, I'm just talking around some of the forces of dance in our culture, how important it's been to me. I'll share one more personal experience in a minute, but now you respond.
You know, it's a funny thing that you've mentioned that, because I actually have a background in partner dancing, and that's how it all started at the age of 4 when my mom took me to my first ballroom class.
Four years old.
I was really scared. The teacher was so strict. He was saying that I was doing everything wrong, and it was a very challenging experience at first. But I think actually dancing with other people throughout growing up really helped me better understand human beings and how we all connect to each other. And that was an essential thing for me to learn before I founded in flow dance, because you need to understand the flow of energy between people and how you can adjust that by your movements. Even in our daily lives, the body language, the way we are interacting with people in our daily lives, it's also a dance. In the end of the day, even your conversation with a person on the street or in the store, that's also a dance in some sort of way. So that's a dance of this energies that you're sending to each other. Even you and I, we're having a dance right now.
I love it. It's a beautiful way to conceive of just human interaction. We may not be aware of it, but our bodies are moving. Maybe we're just shoving each other aside to get in front of the line at the store to get to pay for our shopping cart worth of products, but it's still bodies moving through space.
Absolutely. And I think what is happening right now, going back to your point, before COVID happened, we were already kind of separating and dancing by ourselves. It's just the way the humanity was growing. We are all were individuals, especially in this country. So lonely, doing our jobs, living separately. And then the COVID hit and we physically got separated. The touch was not acceptable anymore. To dance with someone was not acceptable anymore because everyone was so scared. And now we lost this connection. And it is so hard to see this. But you can feel it. I feel it definitely. By just walking on the street and see how people are interacting. No one is hugging anyone anymore. This is ridiculous. We lost this human element because we were so scared of this disease that unfortunately happened, but that's a change that we have to adjust to and find a way to keep this human connection flowing.
I think people sexualize touch a lot, and there's not a lot of opportunities to touch between sexes that isn't sexual touch. Like when you have a boyfriend or girlfriend, mm-hmm. then you can hold, touch, kiss. But dancing is actually one arena where that can happen, but it gets sexualized very quickly, twerking. And I mean, there's so many dances that are about kind of posing and posturing and mating. But then you were introduced as a four-year-old to mm-hmm. partner dancing. So there's ballroom, salsa, tango, a swing, and many, many varieties of each of these. It's sensual, but it's not sexual. And I think it does give you a very different experience of the opposite sex. And it probably humanizes them a lot instead of this like other kind of creature, which is an object or maybe a threat. You have a way to interact. Yeah. I'm getting deep. Oh, we're getting full Jungian here.
Yeah.
No, yeah, we're going in.
You know what? Now that you talk about it, I actually think that having this connection with the opposite sex while growing up through dancing made me have so many male friends in my life. Because now when I think about it, I used to have many boyfriends in school, just the friends that were boys. And as I was growing up, these friends continued being in my life. And I think, as you said, this dance was humanizing them for me instead of just being scared, oh my God, what's going on in here? I just accepted it as a natural process, as a human connection. People really like that.
You could relax around the opposite gender. You could just relax around them because you're just dancing with them, so they're a person to you.
Yeah, they're human. They're the same.
Yeah, so dance goes very deep and has all kinds of beautiful things that could come out of it. But then there's also personal health and therapy and fun and artistic expression. And for me particularly, when I dance, I go into kind of a trance-like state, and I'm in a very profound inner place. All worry goes away. I'm connecting with deep inner flows, getting downloads, kind of intuition, having my problems being answered. Like whatever problem I go in, it's like solved after I've danced. I don't know. Is this uncommon?
This is exactly what we're doing in Flow Dance Workshops. We set an intention in the beginning to reach whatever you're trying to reach, to resolve whatever you're trying to resolve. And as you start moving in a very cautious way, from your heart, not from your mind, when you let your body guide you through that movement and show you the answers you're looking for, you may finish the dance class with so many beautiful insights about your daily life. You may just fix the problem at work that you were thinking about for so long and struggling with. The solution might come to you in your dance. And that's why it's a dance meditation. And also through the breathing techniques, as you're aligning all your chakras, all the energy points in your body, And as you reach the very top, the crown of your head, that's the moment when you receive. You receive so much, and sometimes you receive something that you didn't even expect.
I'm talking with Sasha Davitkina. She has a school of dance called Inflow Dance. You can find her easily on Instagram, Inflow Dance. And, well, let me just throw in a bit of my Mystic Pete advice. I think people try to solve problems by worry, by hitting their head against the wall. And, you know, it doesn't work. It just gives you a headache. And you have to paint the wall. But I think problem solving happens best when you relax, when you go to sleep, when you go for a walk, soak for an hour in a hot tub, or when you dance or paint or do something in the arts. So it's like this natural problem solving process. People are kind of doing the opposite thing to get problem solved and to tap into their inner knowing, like worrying, but it really comes through a whole different direction. Any comments about that?
Yeah, that happens because we were never taught that. In school or universities, they always teach us, okay, you have to have this knowledge, and that's how you're gonna fix everything from your head in a very material way. You're just gonna keep banging your head on the wall until you have your result. No one is teaching us to actually surrender and take a step back and let the life flow around you and see how the energy shifts. We don't have a class in middle school, high school about that. And that's why so many people are struggling, as you said, banging the head.
So this emphasis on thinking through your problems, it's really our intelligence and our big mind that has led us in the wrong direction in terms of figuring out life problems. It's our blessing and our curse to figure out this more internal material. You can't really think it out that much. You have to relax, unwind, as you say, surrender. I'm sure that Inflow Dance is a good way to do that, to tune in, slow down, let these slower waves of consciousness come in. And there lies all the answers.
The more you think, the worse you're going to feel.
Isn't that something?
And the more you're going to struggle. That's why in my life, I prefer when I have like a struggling situation, a challenging situation, I just prefer to feel it. Because that's how I choose the right solution. Mm. That's how the solution comes to me. Otherwise, if I'm going to be constantly overthinking, I'm going to drive myself nuts, first of all. And no one wants that,
because
nothing good comes out of it. But then I'll probably pick something wrong from this place of stress and just trying too hard to solve something.
Well, you're a very intelligent person, and I don't want to minimize the importance of the mind and this brilliant computer we're all walking around with. But to me, it's like something you turn on and turn off. When you want to solve a problem in the mental realm, you do that. But then you turn it off and relax and enjoy yourself and let some other more human force come and give you peace and a sense of belonging in the world and feeling and love.
Yeah, I would say that you surrender to receive that insight and then you use your mind to implement that in your life.
They work together.
They work together.
The heart and the head.
That's the team.
I like it. Good. We're just solving all of humanity's problems here.
Amazing job,
John.
Pete.
what do you see for yourself in the next 2 to 5 years? Where is this all going? You've just kind of emerged with this really neat program. And what would you like to see happen?
I would love to expand. I would love to expand beyond LA for sure. So we're talking national level.
Yeah.
Like in big cities like New York, Chicago, Miami, all the people coming together just for collective healing.
Mm.
Because in order to heal the world, which is so long overdue, by the way, we have to start from ourselves.
Mm.
So having these people really invest in their time into healing themselves, to be healed as a group. That's the end goal. We want to help ourselves to help each other. So I definitely would love to see people around the country doing that. And then, of course, it's going to go international because it doesn't stop in this country. The whole world needs that.
It's a big vision. It's a beautiful vision.
It's a big vision, and I'm 100% in. I'm 100% invested, and I have a big, big belief in what I do.
That's amazing. And I see you have an event called Yerba Inflow.
Correct. So Yerba Inflow is a beautiful collaboration between Inflow Dance and a beautiful cannabis medicine woman.
Okay.
So Yerba, that's a Spanish word for cannabis.
I see.
So Yerba Inflow, it's women only.
Okay.
By the way, it's in Silver Lake. Very private setting, beautiful space, a lot of natural light, beautiful nature, birds singing. And the concept is we're consciously consuming cannabis as a medicine that will help relax the body, release the tension, and really turn off the mind for the purpose of this dancing meditation. So we start with a ceremony for about 15 minutes, and then we flow into the dancing portion of the event, and we finish with sound bath.
Can you describe some actual experiences people had during some of these events?
That's a really good question. So actually, last week, I was in a restaurant, and I came across a girl who was in my workshop about a month ago. So she recognized me and she came over to say hi. She hugged me and she said, "Sasha, you won't believe what happened to me. I'm so, so grateful that I found you, and I'm so grateful that I came to your workshop." And she said, "Something really shifted in me during the workshop. I changed my job. I healed the relationship with my mother. We started talking again. We're building stronger connection. And I just feel so empowered every day to do the things that I like to do." And when I hear feedback like this, it just warms my heart. Because once again, this confirms that I'm doing something right and I'm doing the right thing for the people.
Well, Sasha Davidkina, any closing words?
I just want to say that just take 15 minutes in your day to really dance and surrender to this beautiful divine flow of movement, and you're going to start noticing how the things just fall into places in your life and how the energy shifts. Once you start doing that, you will never stop. I promise you.
Sasha Davidkina, Inflow Dance on Instagram. Thanks so much for coming into studio today.
Thank you so much, Pete. It was amazing.
For some godforsaken reason, Peter's asked me to do another one of these. So here we go. I don't really have an idea of what to talk about, but I thought I would mention creativity. The first time I considered myself a creative person was when I was about, I don't know, maybe 9 or 10 years old, and I used to borrow my dad's camera and take pictures with it. And then when we got the photographs back, I could always tell which were my pictures because they looked better to me, and I kind of liked that. And I didn't really think anything of it because, you know, I'm 10 years old, but looking back on it, I think that was when the first creative muscles started to move in my brain. And then, I don't know, I kind of forgot about it until I was older. I didn't decide to be a photographer and live on my creativity until I was about 23. And I I borrowed a friend's camera and I took photographs and I started working for newspapers and magazines and I actually earned quite a good living. I was doing all the restaurant photographs for Faye Mashler in the Evening Standard. So I was getting at least 3 or 4 photographs a week in the London newspaper. So that was earning me relatively, like, not bad cash for back then. And I was relying on my creativity to pay my rent and pay everything. And it worked out great. It was really good. 40 years later, creativity is what has kept me going during this pandemic lockdown thing. I'm not getting paid for it, but I find myself waking up most days and creating something, whether it just be some little audio thing like this, or a video of my latest adventures, or just coming up with some crazy ideas. But recently, it's very much been like creating my little films that I do. And I'll plug my YouTube channel here. It's Jaywalking the World, and it's on YouTube. If you type in Jaywalking the World, you'll find me, and you'll see what I'm up to. What I did was, a year ago, I bought a boat because I couldn't afford to buy a house, and I didn't want to pay the stupid rent that people are paying in London. So I bought a boat, and I live on a boat. And that has caused me to go on adventures. And if I'm going to go on adventures, I'm going to film it and share it with everybody. So that's my little plug, and I'm fine with that. But what makes people creative? I don't know. It's not really anything I thought about that much. I just do it. But I really appreciate the fact that people create stuff all the time. I know people that they were dancers. My friend Claudia is a tango dancer, and she teaches tango, and she can't teach tango right now. And so she started painting, and her paintings are beautiful. Other friends of mine have become writers and music composers. They're doing more music than they ever thought possible because they're stuck at home. They got nothing else to do. They can't go and work. And so if you haven't scratched that little creative itch already, we're not done with this lockdown yet. So there's still time. I encourage you to just be creative, even if you don't even know what the fuck you're doing. It's like, just do it. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to write songs because it's like I'm not a songwriter or music. But I like the way that Peter has insisted that I do something like this, because I've been thinking about what to say and I didn't really come up with any appropriate stories or anything. It's just let me just turn this thing on and see what I start talking about. So it's a little different. I'm not speaking from any notes, and you can probably tell. But I really urge you to be creative. Even if you've not been creative, do it now. Film yourself doing something. It's like, you might find something that you didn't know you could do, and you turn out to be really good at it. I don't like talking to camera. And I mean, I don't even like really doing this, because I'm usually on the production side of things. I'm usually on the other side of the camera or microphone. So being on this side and putting myself out there and speaking into a camera is not comfortable for me. But I forced myself to do it, and when I look back on it, I'm actually not bad at it. I can watch it without cringing too much, and I think I've got better at it over the past couple of years. So I like that. So I urge you to try something. It doesn't really matter what it is, so long as it falls into that big creative envelope and see what happens. You never know. You might find that you're good at something that you had no clue that you could even do. And if you find that you don't like it, well, who cares? At least you tried. And I really hope you've survived this little lockdown thing as well as you possibly could have. It's not been fun, but I hope we've all learned a little bit and maybe a few skills as well. Thanks a lot for listening.
That was some words by Steve Payne, friend of the show. Now, here's an artist that unless you're over 60, you probably have not heard about. Yet in the 1950s and early 60s, he was widely listened to. Mitch Miller. Likely most families of that era had one of his albums. But he has been almost entirely forgotten, either because tastes radically change, or because his music was corny schmaltz. When rock and roll rolled in, it rolled right over Sing Along with Mitch. I barely remember seeing some of his albums around my house as a young kid, but hadn't thought about him for the decades in between. I randomly came across something of his recently in one of my music-searching manias, then went on to listen to most of his catalog, and realized that my mom, a classically trained pianist, sang me a number of these tunes when I was a child, probably because she had been listening to Sing Along with Mitch. So that's where she got those songs. In any case, I thought it time that you, my beloved listeners, be introduced or reintroduced to Mitch Miller so your life can be so much richer, even if the music trends towards treacly schmaltz. We'll hear Tiptoe Through the Tulips with Me, Zaina, 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 Till We Meet Again, Red River Valley, On Top of Old Smoky, and Auld Lang Syne. And at the end, as a special treat, there's a second version of Tiptoe Through the Tulips, this time by a fellow named Tiny Tim. If you know, you know.
Can't you hear the music playing? Chinese square. Zeta, 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 come where all our friends will find us with the dancers there.
Hey! Tiptoe through the tulips.
We are coming to the end of a show called The Mystic Pete Chronicles. If you'd like to reach me, I'm at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. We started with a story by the extraordinary Mike Bone, Promotion. Then I interviewed Sasha Davitkina. She teaches inflow dance. Then some words about creativity by Steve Payne. And a number of selections of music by Mitch Miller. Thank you so much for listening. Mystic Pete out!